Today is October 11th, 2017. Welcome to the Personal Computer Show. This is the original personal computer radio show of all things computing. I'm Hank Key, and I'm in the studio with my colleague Joe King. Podcasts of this program is available on PRN.FM and on our website, PCRadioShow.org. Today, we will cover an increasing trend among cable users, and that's cutting the cord. But before we get to that, let's do a quick review of important computer news in the past week.
Excuse me. You said cut cording.
No, I changed it to cutting the cord.
It's cord cutting that you're thinking of.
No, I'm talking about cutting the cord, okay? Call it whatever you want, Joe.
I want to call it a pain, but you'll explain later on
wait a minute.
It's a pain.
Now that you've confused the audience, what is it that we're going to cover a little later?
Cord cutting.
Which is what?
Which is getting your TV without paying for a cable company.
But you pay elsewhere, though, right? I mean, the way you say it, it sounds like it's for free.
We will cover
we'll
that
cover
later.
It, okay? But we really have some important news, though.
The news that we have, it has to do with things other than the cord cutting. Back in the day, when everybody was getting in their mail a small CD, and it was beginning to get annoying that AOL was trying to cover the world with their CDs, they offered at no other charge, no additional charge, a thing that they called instant messaging. Nobody knew what that was, but they knew that it was free and they wanted it, so they used the CD. And instant messaging allowed the customers, the users, people like you and me, to send a message to our friends and not wait for a telegram or anything else. They could get it instantly on their computer as we sent it on our computer. Well, that's ancient history in many ways, because today almost everybody's got a smartphone and we can text all our friends easily. But ancient history does disappear. And AIM, AOL's instant messaging, is gone. It's history.
No, it's not gone yet. It's going away. December 15th, they are finally cutting it, service.
Just in time as for a Christmas present.
Well, in other words, they're giving you 60 days to go find another service.
Well, there's an interesting point, Hank. I used to have another service on my Windows machine, but I can't think of one now. Can you?
Well, there is, okay? But what you want is something that's more universally available to the whole, to everyone, so that it doesn't matter what platform they run in. If it runs in a set platform, then you have a very small group of people that you can communicate with. Well, because if you think about it, that's what email is. Email is, it's really...
It's a multi-platform.
Yeah. No, it's a specific platform, okay?
Because email is really multi-platform, because you have an Apple and I have a Windows machine, and somebody that I know has a Unix machine, and I can send email to the three of us.
That's because you're using a common software platform called browser. But if you didn't have a browser, what do you do then?
I don't have a browser on the Unix machine.
Yes, you do. Whether you know it or not, it's a browser.
Okay, we're calling things a browser.
Yeah.
But
hey, listen, we were talking about the Apple iPhone 8 last week, and there were reported two cases of it. And Joe,
Reported two cases of a fatal flaw, and that is a swelling of the battery. We're not sure what caused in either of those two cases the swelling of the battery, but it did render the iPhone useless. I asked Hank, did he really want to report something where out of hundreds of millions of people using Apples, we wanted to report two cases, and we didn't even have a follow-up to those two cases?
Well, we now do have a follow-up where the Chinese state media is saying that there are isolated, or in other words, there are other cases where either the battery swollen, the cover came off, or it actually overheated, okay? There was no fire, but there was overheating.
What did Apple say? I'm sure somebody's asked them.
They're working on it. They're working on it. And
they've got the same problem, frankly, that I have. It's two isolated cases in this country and possibly one.
No, it wasn't this country. It was in Taiwan.
Oh, it was in Taiwan.
Yes, it was in Taiwan.
And possibly two or three or four more in China. It's very hard to investigate a problem if you can't reproduce it.
Well, you can reproduce it. The question is, how do you do Q&A on the tolerance? In other words, if I were to heat up the unit, I could get it to,
If you got it to heat up through normal usage?
Yeah, I could do that. But the problem is the battery is so thin, and there's no heat sink in the unit. There's no fan. And if the cover is, just a fraction, very minute fraction difference, it can cause a problem on a metal cover.
Well, how about this phone, Hank? I don't know how to overheat it. It never has overheated.
Well, Joe, how do you keep a battery from overheating is low voltage and basically make it under power. In other words, if you want to be able to do a whole lot of functions like on the iPhone 8 with, when you take pictures, it has to go through extra computing. It's going to require a lot of process. But if you were to limit what the – in other words, if you didn't have the camera in there, you wouldn't be drawing down that much power. Every time you draw on that battery, it heats it up.
So you're suggesting that in order to save space and size, they may have put in a smaller battery than they really needed for all of that power.
Well, with the new Galaxy that came out, the Galaxy 8, how they solved the problem was that they cut the life of the battery between charges is shortened. In other words, they were trying to extend it. And, of course, in trying to extend it, they were pushing an awful lot to be done.
Well, that gets to another subject that I want to talk about some other night, batteries, because I have in front of me right now, I have a Google Pixel, state-of-the-art Pixel. It's about to be the old Pixel, but that's another story. However, I used to get a good 20 hours of life out of the battery, and that's now been cut.
Well, you don't mean life. You mean between cycles.
Between cycles.
Right.
I could run it in my normal manner for a 20-hour day, and now I have to squeeze to get a 10-hour day out of it. They updated it to the latest.
And what they did was they lowered the power of the battery. Therefore, you'll have a shorter period of recycle. And if you want a more powerful battery, guess what? It's size and heat.
Well, they did several things on this Pixel. They upgraded it to the next edition of Android. So I'm now running a thing they call Oreo. And I lost time on the battery. But they did something else for me that we'll talk about some other time. It's no longer a removable battery. I no longer can add storage. They made it a much less useful camera, much less useful phone, a better camera, but not as good a phone, and that's what I bought.
Well, why don't you go back to basics and say, I want a phone. Now, what is it that will satisfy me as a phone? And all the other things are just trinkets,
Well, unfortunately, one by one, they're doing away with the flexibility, user growth that I wanted. That is being able to put in a micro SD card, put in my own battery, recharge the battery.
Can I tell you what
life hard.
You know what would make a big difference? I'll tell you right now, okay? Putting the digital camera functions in there and the camcorder function there, it's like people say to me, you carry a separate digital camera. Yeah, because no matter how cheap that digital camera is, it's going to take better pictures than any smartphone you have.
Really?
Yes.
Why?
Why? Because it's because I'm not trying to squeeze everything into one little tiny box. For instance, to make that I call it the candy bar. I remember, when the phones first came out, there was the candy bar
and the flip phone
and the flip phones. Right. Okay. Now on. Because you make it a candy bar, the thickness is like is the most important factor. You can't put a zoom lens in there, okay?
No, I can't, but I do get probably more resolution than your cheap point-and-shoot camera.
Really? Now, you really believe that? That's not true, Joe.
It's not?
No, because on a less than $100 digital camera, I can get 24 megapixels.
Right.
Yeah, 24, not 2, not 12, not 10, like many of the smartphones.
I'm getting 24 on this one.
Sure. But you know what? You're squeezing it into a much smaller space. Therefore, you have other things you got to engineer.
Well, and that my
wait. I also have a zoom lens too, a real zoom lens.
Well, I don't have a zoom lens. And
wait. I got more than that too.
No, I also have a camera, but I don't use that much anymore because this is always with me. My big problem, and they haven't solved it. All they've done is taken away. I need more battery. And when I bought this Pixel from Google, I had the battery life I needed. And then they upgraded the operating system, and I don't have the battery life. And I've been reading complaints about it, and you'd be surprised how few complaints there are.
Well, you know how they're solving the problem of a shorter battery recycling life. They're saying is, okay, we'll come up with the term they use is recharging without connecting a wire, which gives the impression that it's wireless. But the fact that you still have to make a contact, whether it's a wire or touching, it's still a contact you have to make.
I do it my recharging a little bit differently, Hank. I have a thing in my pocket which I can attach to the camera, and it will charge the camera.
Well,
it's called an external battery.
Well, this is one of the things that people go and do things in cycles, okay? I can tell you, I remember back in the 70s, I was actually started in the 1960s, okay? They said, if you go with cable television, there will be no advertising, and that would be the, that would be what the incentive is to go with cable television. When I got cable television, there was advertising, but I tolerated it. And then they said, we could put other functions on, like telephone capability. And I shied away from that, all right? And by the way, today, a lot of people think they still have a landline. Now, technically speaking, I would say the number of people having landlines is a very small number now, because if you are getting the so-called landline service off a cable company, that's VoIP. That's not a real landline.
Hank, I had a landline from a company you may have heard of, Verizon. And when you pressed zero, the woman who answered said, "This is a Verizon operator." And then one day, Verizon was building a tower or something, and I lost my signal. And so I called Verizon up, and they said, "Not to worry." And the next day was delivered a little black box. Instructions were, plug your phone into one end of the box, plug the other end of the box into your AC power line, and turn the on switch. I now had a new landline, they said.
Yeah, but it's not really a landline.
No, it was VoIP, but yeah. They said it was landline.
You know, I have to tell you, it's I resisted for the longest time, and I'll tell you what the tipping point was. I had a separate cable service. I also had separate internet service and separate phone service, and on my regular bill with Verizon, I was paying something like $30-$35, and I got to be careful of what time I call and the long distance call. And then with this, the two furs and three furs, they said, "Gee, for $5 more, you get telephone calls." I says, "Okay, but what would that do? What are the limitations?" "Oh, the limitations is." You can call any 50 states in the United States. You can call 24/7. "What?" I said, "For how much more? $5, $10 more a month." "Oh, how can you say no to that?"
You can't. But you can say no to the fact that one of the reasons, he doesn't tell you this, one of the reasons Hank had three separate servers, one for television, one for telephone, and
internet.
And the internet was, he said to me, "Hey, listen, if something goes down, I still have the other two."
Well, it's
it's not anymore, you don't.
No, I do. I actually have I really have a plan A and plan B. Okay, I'll go through that a little later. So what's been happening is that in offering these services, the cable companies I thought would go out of business, but they are relevant because they're offering two furs and three furs or the three plays, and it includes TV stations. Now I have Fios, okay, and I want to cut my costs down because I look at my bill and I find that with the very tight budgeting I have, you know, for the average user, when you count your cell phone, your telephone, your internet, and your TV, and it's really not a whole lot of extreme TV. It's anywhere from $200 to $250 a month, easily.
But that's
easily.
Including some pay for TV.
No.
HBO, Showtime.
No, wait a minute. And then, I said between $200 to $250, okay? The $200, you're going to find that the premium channels are almost zilch, okay? Now, what it is that when you work that out, it comes out to about easily $3,000 a year. No, and I'm saying to myself, you know, for the average person, they say that the median salary is like $50,000. Well, after you pay, they don't pay taxes. If you make up to what, 48, 47, let's say you don't pay taxes, let's say you have $50,000, but spending $3,000 easily for communication expense,
$10 a day.
Yeah,
they come home from work and they watch a couple of hours of television. It's easily worth $1.50 per hour that they're watching.
Well,
then they make a phone call to Ann Smith out in Ohio, and that's worth 75 cents. And
well, Joe, if you're going to put it that way, I could say that let's see, a pack of cigarettes is $20, 20 butts. Gee, if you only smoke one cigarette, it's only $1 a day.
Well, there's one thing that you left out there, and the manufacturers of the cigarettes also left out. There's a delayed payment you have to make to them.
Yes,
that's,
I know.
That's called COPD, which you get 20 years later.
But by the way, the $200 to $250, that is not counting the hidden charges called regulation charges, the charges for access, the charges that, wait a minute, some of these ads you get like $89, you get a three play, $110, you get three play.
They don't advertise it that way.
No. Spectrum sends it out that way. $90, and it comes out to, and they say each one is $30, so times three is $90.
What Spectrum's latest ad is, which I got.
They keep changing it, by the way.
I just got it. I'm not a Spectrum customer. And it was a very, very big $29.
Per function.
It talked about TV, and it talked about internet, and it talked about telephone, and it had a very, very big $29.95.
Each.
The word each was in four-point microtype at the bottom of the page.
Well, you're an old person, so you couldn't see it, but I was able to see it. Okay?
You wear magnifying glasses if you can see that.
Now, a lot of people have been cutting out some of the services. Now, they did a survey recently in the last quarter, whereas TV viewing used to be quite high. For the first time, it's now under 4 hours a day.
Let's see. There's an hour for the news. That's three,
under
three,
4 hours a day for TV viewing now.
And do they give you a time frame? Do they say that's mostly prime time or mostly daytime?
No, they're saying that it's over the course of the over the course of a day, because some people are night owls, some people are early birds and so on.
Interesting.
But it's under four, and many people are saying, hey, if all I watch is HBO and TV. The main networks, if I got myself a regular antenna, and you'd be surprised, I have a regular antenna for a TV without using the cable box.
What can you get over the air nowadays?
Over 50 stations.
Really? Because a lot of the stations are only digital now.
They all are digital. They all are digital now. And so when you go like 2.1, 2.2, 2.3, and I said, wow, it's not only just ABC, CBS, and NBC. Now there are a lot of subsidiary channels available over the air free.
Interesting.
Now,
you live out in Queens where there's not a lot of tower buildings, so I imagine you get pretty good reception just from a rooftop antenna.
Well, I'm between two tall buildings.
So you have the same problems.
I have a lot of reflections. Okay, but what now? If you can get over 50 channels, and some of the channels, like I was surprised, foreign languages you can get for free. Now, if I have internet service and someone like HBO comes to me and say, "Gee, suppose for $5 a month or $10 a month, we'll give you HBO service," you could say, "Gee, I can cut out the regular TV service."
But where would you get it?
Huh? Over the internet.
And where do you get the internet from?
Well, then what I could say is, hey, Time Warner or now Spectrum or Fios, you know, the three play, suppose I just only want internet only service. And for phone, you know what? I could cut that out because I have a cell phone and I'm going to use a cell phone regularly as a regular phone.
So you're saying to them, I'm putting words in your mouth, so for the three play, instead of $29 for each of three, I want to pay $29 but just get one.
Correct.
And what they're going to say...
Wait. And there's been a great... Now, I was very surprised by this, okay? They said that depending on the area, they said that's about they call cord cutting, okay? Cutting the cord. I call cutting, you call it cord cutting. That it's been like 20, 25% of the people are effectively doing that. And I got to finish this, okay?
Go ahead.
And so I was very surprised, but with Queens Public Television, which I am affiliated with, the number of cable subscribers is up, didn't get cut.
They did not get cut.
Did not get cut, and I did an analysis on it, and I have to tell you why, okay?
Why not?
Because it is one of the most highly concentrated groups of you know, different ethnic groups. So the cable TVs are playing to the different groups, and that's the only way you can get in the
because
foreign language.
Get the foreign language
foreign
on
language.
Cable TV.
And the other is we have a lot of senior citizens, and they're just comfortable just, you know, don't rock the boat, just leave it the way it is.
I agree with both those points. And if my business were selling cable TV, I would make a very, very quick change in what I was selling. I would say... The triple play is not $29 per piece. The triple play is $100 a month, and you get all three things. You don't want to use everything I sell you? You don't have to, but that's what you're getting.
Now, the thing is that I was preparing this piece on cord cutting, and what are the things you should look at? In other words, how do you know who offers what services, and and then I said to Joe, there's no set way of doing it. There's no set formula because you have a different organization with different pricing. And then all of a sudden, I see a piece of news item that came out last week. Comcast, which is the biggest cable carrier, you want internet only? No problem at all. $90 a month. Wait a minute. What happened to that?
The triple play.
Well... you know, if you really think about it, Joe, they were offering the telephone for $5-$10 a month, and you want the TV, it's another $5. And you say to yourself, why am I going through all this trouble, okay? And that's what's happening. Now, you could say, like what Joe said to me, well, that's only Comcast. I mean, who else is going to do that, all right? Charter is thinking seriously of also doubling the rates. And guess what? Once one does it, it's follow the leader.
And the problem is that I have RCN, but RCN runs on somebody else's cables. And if somebody else is charging it, RCN's going to have to charge it.
Well, I was thinking that, okay, so you go to another service, okay? In a study I did, I was very surprised that only 1 in 5 or 20% of the population that has cable services, has a competitor in the same area. In other words, 80% is single cable carrier and...
Right. And my feeling, even before I saw Hank's study on that, was when I was out on Long Island, I was able to get Verizon to sell me Fios. Came into Manhattan, and I called up and said, I'd now like to just move my Fios in. And they said, no, that's not the way it works. Your neighborhood doesn't have Fios.
Well, Joe, what I did was I have Fios. I know you don't. So By the way, you happen to be in an area that has competing services because you're in New York City, and that's called you're the one in five.
I'm the one. Right. You guys are the other five.
Yeah. Now, no. I'm part. You're part. No, you're with me. The one in five.
Right.
Okay. Now, what I did was I looked at the Verizon map. Okay, and Queens was literally like a solid red line where, like, contiguous, you know, with Fios coverage, all right?
All of Queens has Fios.
Well, no, not all of Queens. Half of Queens, but a solid solid red. But I look at Manhattan, it's mosaic. It's not, they're not like, you can see a lot of red, but they're like little pinpoints.
That's
right. And you know why, right?
No, I don't.
Because the Verizon has been, you know, taking the task for how come you're not installing. They go to the building management says, oh, you want to install? It's going to cost you. And they said, well, if it's going to cost me and I got to charge a certain rate, I can't make money on it. In other words, they need the building's permission. Like I know, like I'm in Queens. I know of a business area. Spectrum is in it. And the building won't allow Fios or RCN to be in it.
I spoke to the building about that after I heard about this.
Right.
And the building said, like most stories you hear, there are two sides, and you don't get them both. You just get part of one side. I said, what's the problem? And they said, it's a very simple thing.
It's money.
It's money. They, Time Warner paid us to come in, lay cables, and interrupt the whole thing with ladders and elevators. And we said to Verizon, they want to come in, they're going to have to pay expenses also. It's like, you know, anything else. I said, did they offer you a fee of any kind? He said, there's no monthly fee that we're looking for. We're looking for a one-time payment. And they said, no. Now, you go to Verizon, if you know anybody there, because you can't call them, and they say, well, that's not really quite the way it happens. And they have their story.
I know, because with the Verizon, the city is saying you were supposed to have Fios available throughout the city by 2016, 2017. And they said, we are. It's running right by the building under the street,
and
because they're not allowed to extend it into the building.
And if you go to the landlords, it's Verizon's fault. And if you go to Verizon, it's the landlord's fault. The only thing I can tell you, and I can tell you this with absolute certainty, it's not a question of fault. It's a question of problem, and it's our problem.
Oh, yeah, but now, in the meantime, what can you do if you still want to cut the cord, okay? Or cord cutting, or whatever you want to call it. You could get a hotspot unit for your internet. Now, it may not have the speed that you're looking for, but for individual use or even for 2-3 people on it, it's still quite acceptable, because I know that on the phone, okay, on the regular cell phone, I've been to different cities and and you go to these hotels, and you know, some hotels will say, you will need the internet, just here's the password. However, you go to the fancier the hotel, it's like, I won't tell you who the hotel is.
Tell us who the hotel is.
Well, no, because I said, how much is the internet a day? $25 a day.
Well, I got to tell you, I have stayed at five-star resort hotels, and I've stayed at pretty cheap motels, Red Roof, and I've never been charged anything like that. At one resort I went to, which was a nice resort, there was a check off of five. I think it was $5 a day for the premium stations. And the premium stations also came with Wi-Fi, so it was a package.
Well,
deal.
They're allowing to do now. I have T-Mobile for cell service, and and I tell you, T-Mobile has been a disruptor. They've actually done everyone a favor, because with the cell phone, it was like how many minutes, and when you hit a certain number of minutes, you got to go, you know. Well, what they said was unlimited number of minutes. Now, if you hit a certain number of traffic, they may throttle you to a lower one. I could see that. But it's for the same, whatever the price is, it's unlimited number of minutes. And so when I've been out of town, I just use the T-Mobile cell phone as a hotspot. And now the other cell phone supplies are doing the same thing. And as you know, Joe, you could get a dedicated hot box, and you don't have to use a cell phone.
I have one of those from Verizon. And for the first 5 or 6 years, it was unlimited. Now it's a 6 gigabyte limitation at the what is it called? LTE. Basic LTE. They now have an LTE Plus. I don't know what it's called.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I can also use my cell phone.
Correct. As a hotspot.
As a hotspot. Some carriers object. Verizon doesn't now that it's limited. I have a family plan, and we all share 6 gigabytes of data. Luckily, none of us download hi-fi, high-definition movies.
So what we're saying is that if you still want to cut your expenses, it can be done. There are different ways of doing it, and I said to Joe that this is a topic that's you can't do it in one day. And what we're going to do is we're going to parse this into little tiny pieces on how you could cut and you know, look at alternatives because, you know, sometimes you got to think outside the box if you really want to cut. By the way, you have to ask yourself a question. Do you really need something? You know, people get things and they don't necessarily need. Now, I have to tell you, in the second half hour, we got some excellent presentations from Dr. Alfred Poor and Marty Winston. And I think we should get to it. And you know what? Let's get to it. And in the second half hour of the show, we have the following feature segments. Wearable and Health Technology by Dr. Alfred Poor. And he's going to be covering the smart bandage and wearable devices for early skin cancer detection and a self-winding smartwatch. On the home automation end, I had asked Marty that with all the work he does he do any basic soldering?
Hello, this is Alfred Poor with news about wearable technology from Health Tech Insider.
When you were a kid and you fell and scraped your knee, you'd get a Band-Aid put on it. Band-Aids are great. They protect your skin, they keep the dirt out, and they give your skin a chance to heal better. How could you improve on that? Well, a bunch of engineers at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, working with the researchers from both Harvard Medical School and Tufts University, they've created what they call a smart bandage. We've covered smart bandages before, but usually that just means that there's sensors in the bandage and they're connected wirelessly to a device that helps monitor the healing process. This smart bandage is very smart. It's actually got its own microcontroller built right in. The bandage itself contains a bunch of woven yarn. These fibers are special because they're a gel that contains pharmaceutical materials. They contain drugs, and the different fibers can contain different drugs. What happens is the microcontroller works with sensors that are embedded in the bandage. When the sensors detect different conditions, the microcontroller responds automatically by sending an electrical current to the appropriate fiber, and the electrical current causes the fiber to heat up, melts the gel, and releases the medication. Instead of having to slather on a bunch of ointments or whatever over a wound, whether it needs it or not, this way the bandage can dispense the appropriate amount of the correct medication in order to foster healing. It's a clever design, and it's been demonstrated to speed up the healing of wounds much faster than normal. It's got a great potential for helping patients heal better faster. Now, one of the things about cancer is we can do amazing things in terms of treating cancer, but the chances of success in treating a cancer go way up the sooner you can detect the disease, and so you can start treatment earlier. For example, for melanoma, which can be a very dangerous skin cancer, if it's detected at stage one, the earliest stage, patients have about a 97% survival rate. However, if it isn't detected until stage four, its highest stage, the survival rate is only 5%, one out of 20 people. So clearly, we want to be able to determine whether or not that funny thing on your skin is in fact cancer or not. The problem is it's a little scary. Often it can be difficult to find the time to go see a dermatologist, and you don't know if you want to go see a dermatologist about every little thing. And so a lot of people put off getting checked. This can delay diagnosis and treatment and leads to problems. So wouldn't it be great if we had a way that we could test for skin cancer that was easy and not only wouldn't require a physician, but is something that maybe consumers could do on their own? I mean, after all, right now, if you go and have a skin test and they decide there's something that looks a little iffy, they have to do a biopsy, take a sample of the tissue, send it off to a lab, and it takes time for the lab to come back with its results. Well, there's a company called Dermasensor. They have created a device that basically looks like a big ballpoint pen. It's a handheld device. Basically, it's got a sensor at the end of a metal tip. And if you touch it to the skin, it's able to determine whether the tissue is cancerous or not. The device is still in development. They are already going through clinical trials and hope to get FDA clearance eventually. Eventually, you'll be able to check that mole in the privacy of your own home very conveniently with a handheld device. And hopefully this will help people identify cancers, skin cancer, a lot sooner, get it treated sooner, and have much better outcomes. If you've been listening to these Health Tech Insider reports for any length of time, you know one of the concerns that I have about wearables is in order for them to be successful, they have to do what I call disappear into our lives. And by that, I don't mean they have to be invisible. But what I mean is you don't have to think about them. You don't have to fuss with them. To me, the perfect measure is the $20 Timex watch. It will run for years on a little battery. You just set it once when you put it on. And whenever you want to know what time it is, you just take a look at it and there it is. It's very convenient, unobtrusive, and it just works. And you don't have to think about it. Well, the problem with a lot of wearables, especially smartwatches, is you have to think about them a lot. They don't run very long. Pretty much every night, you've got to plug them in to recharge them, if not more often than that. So the problem here is that's not convenient. It's intrusive. It's something that you have to think about. It's not a great solution. Wouldn't it be wonderful if you had a smartwatch that you didn't have to think about? I think back to the old mechanical self-winding watches. You didn't have to wind the mainspring. Just by, you know, your normal movements would generate enough power to keep the spring wound and to keep the watch going. Well, there are now smartwatches coming out, they're in development, that don't require recharging because they can harvest energy from the environment. I've talked about the Matrix watch in the past. It runs by harvesting energy from your body heat. Well, now there's another self-powered watch coming along. It's called the Lunar, L-U-N-A-R. It actually has a transparent solar panel on its face. What this does is it actually can take light. It can be sunlight or it can be lighting from indoors. It will harvest that energy from the light and can be enough to keep it running. So you never have to recharge it. It does have a way of recharging it. It has a wireless recharger if you ever should need it because it didn't get enough light. But the beauty of this is that if it gets enough light, you don't have to think about it. You just wear it always ready to go. The company is running a Kickstarter campaign to help fund the development. So it'll take a while before this comes to market. But if they are successful, it would be great to have a watch that would charge itself simply by being exposed to the light throughout the day. And that is an example of a wearable that would essentially disappear into your life.
For more information, go to healthtechinsider.com. This is Alfred Poor. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Alfred. I had asked Marty that with all the work he does he do any basic soldering? Because most people today don't even know what soldering is. He says, of course. And of course, he filled me in with what he did.
One of the crazy things about designing our 40-year cybernetic house is how much I'm back in the 70s doing in electronics now what I had to do then. In fact, it wasn't that long ago I had to open an old box to find, surprisingly, 5, 6, 7 old soldering irons that I hadn't used in more than 30 years. Solder was in there, and some of the tools and gimmicks and all of that. So I want to talk very quickly about soldering. I'm going to go mile a minute, so a lot of this is available in search engines if I go too fast. How to solder. You hold the solder iron, which gets really, really hot, where the two wires or the wire and the printed circuit board join. You don't heat the solder. You heat the joint and let the joint melt the solder. Solder melts at a temperature that little iron can produce. It forms around the joint. It keeps air out. It gives it some mechanical solidity. It's a good thing. Elenco and others have some great kits if you want to look them up and try them. You'll learn how to solder, and it's fun because you've got something to play with when you're done. Soldering also has accessories. It has little things to hold components or hold circuit boards. It's got heat sinks, which help draw the heat away from more sensitive components. And again, you can look up soldering accessories and see some of this stuff. One of the most important accessories is a fume extractor, because flux fumes can irritate your throat and eventually your lungs, and that's a bad thing. This has a little fan and a carbon filter, and it takes the bad stuff out of the air. If you don't have that, either don't breathe or be in somewhere that's really well ventilated, like an open garage to do your soldering. Not the best weather for it, is it? In the 70s, you wanted to hack a board. We'd go right to the back of the board and go right to the traces and take a part, a component, a resistor, what have you, and solder it right to the traces, or scratch the traces open so there would be a break in that connection, and put it across that little scratch so that instead of having a direct connection, we've inserted a component. Well, guess what? Surface mount works like that, but smaller. So one of the most important accessories these days is some way to visualize and light up the tiny areas you're working on. My old soldering irons were soldering irons, and they had bigger tips because in that era, the smallest things you were dealing with were little 8-pin, 14-pin integrated circuits and DIP packages, dual inline packages. These days, it can get a lot smaller. That can get a lot tighter. So I asked Weller to provide me a soldering station for review. Now, I'd already had from Elenco a soldering station with an analog control, a knob that controlled the heat. This has two soldering irons, one for soldering and one for desoldering, and digital controls. I solder now at 715 degrees, and this takes, oh, maybe 15, 20 seconds to get to that heat. The point on that soldering pencil is really, really fine. It is the closest thing to magic I've had in soldering forever. If you're using something as small as surface mount devices, they're the size of a seed in your rye bread. So you're going to want to put them onto the board with something clever like Scotch tape, and then use your soldering iron and your solder to make sure the metal parts that are supposed to touch, and the solder melts onto them. That'll hold them in place. You need teensy tools, tiny points on tweezers, some of them non-conductive, most of them non-conductive, to work on this stuff and never, ever work on a circuit that's powered. You're going to have accidents you can't anticipate. You're going to need to trim the leads that come through a printed circuit board, and there are teeny tiny trimmers for that, including some that have a little keeper strip that stops the lead you cut off from flying all over the room or into your face or anything like that. One of the things, and I want to mention fritzing. There are solderless breadboards that you don't need to solder. You put the wires into little spring clips, and if you understand how they're set up in the arrangement, it makes it very easy to prototype something, to change values, to move things around. Solderless breadboards are very cool for determining that your circuit actually works, but then you're going to want something more permanent. And there's a really cool thing out there called fritzing, and fritzing is software, and you can download it for free. Fritzing lets you start with the solderless breadboard layout, or lets you start with a schematic, and it can turn one into the other, or go to a printed circuit layout. It's not the most organized thing in the world, but it's a head start on getting that kind of thing done. So I had a specific thing I needed to build. When you have a Raspberry Pi or something like an Arduino, you're dealing with I/O pins that are at 3.3 volt power levels, which means you're never more than about 3 volts, 3 to 3.3, and never less than that if you want to hit a solid 1, a logic 1, or very near ground if you're going to hit a 0. I have a need for flashing lights in the ceiling of each of 3 garage spaces. Tell you, whoa, slow down, stop, this is where you want to park. And for those lights, I got LED marker lights, the kind they sell in the auto stores. They're going onto normal electrical box plates that go on the ceiling of the garage. Those are 12-volt lights. They're pretty bright. They don't need a lot of current, about 50 milliamps each. So I needed a circuit to drive them from 1.5-volt logic states, and that means a conversion. That's called, depending on your logic, either a high-side switch or a low-side switch. It's a low-side switch if you're just turning its ground connection on and off, a high-side switch if you're turning its positive connection on and off, and that's positive high-side switch approach, the one I chose to do. And I found a really nice little circuit for that, that in for each of these lights needs 2 transistors, 1 NPN, 1 PNP, and 3 resistors, and a 4-post header. That's everything it needs. So I went to Fritzing, and I put together a solderless breadboard-style circuit, took another look at it, made it smaller, put it on a solderless breadboard. Yeah, the thing works. Okay, now, how am I going to put it to the light? Well, Fritzing is not the answer for my printed circuits. I only need 3 of them. There are prototyping boards with printed circuit traces already on them. Some of them mimic the layout of solderless breadboards. Some of them are a little bit different, but anything that lets me connect this stuff up is going to work. So there's another piece in my toolkit, the Dremel Moto Saw. The Dremel Moto Saw is like a tiny bandsaw that can let me cut through these circuit boards. So I did a circuit board layout that was only a few pins wide, and I had a tiny circuit board that let me do that 3, 4, 5 times on a single board. Cut those apart. I've got little strips. Populate those with the parts I need. Solder them on. It's like manufacturing on a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 time basis. Very, very cool, and with that soldering kit, very neat. Now, that soldering kit has accessories. Here are some of the most important ones, other than the fume hood, which is important. There are little things that hold the board in place. You can do it with alligator clips. You can look at the soldering accessories. They're all over the place. There are things with slits in them just specifically to hold boards, or you can use, in some cases, something like a pan of ice. You want to hold the board steady. You want to hold the part steady. You might need a heat sink if you've got a semiconductor, for example, where exposure to heat could make it fail. I've got these things, and the most important thing is I have a couple of ways of lighting and magnifying the point at which I want to make my connection. The soldering iron point is something you don't want to sit there forever. It's going to be there long enough to get the wires hot enough to melt the solder, and then you take it away. That solder bead is nice and shiny. You're done. If it comes up kind of matte finish, that's a cold solder joint. It's not going to work so well. So what I did was not to put 5 circuits soldered together on the board and then cut it, but to cut the board first and then use each of the strips to hold one of several of these high side switches. Take the strip, populate it, solder it. Before it cools, test it. Make sure you didn't mess up a soldering joint, and you're done. So the things I wanted in review to bring up were soldering, how it's a thing we used to do in the 70s that all of a sudden is cool for makers, and you may want to try it yourself. Don't insist. Solderless breadboards, great way to prototype, experiment, mess around with circuits, see what changes do, see what kind of things you can do. All of a sudden, you know, the thing went whoop, is going, eek, and that's nice if you want that to happen. And the little translation boards that let you do that in a more permanent printed circuit. Well, I will tell you, if it does work, record it. Make a diagram. I use PDFs of what you've put together. Put a copy of that on your hard drive. And when it's on the hard drive, of course, backup, backup, backup. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Marty. Public service announcements of Northeast Regional Tri-State Computer Club meetings. The New York Amateur Computer Club will have a presentation on web accessibility for the physically challenged. Thursday, October the 12th, meeting time is 7 p.m. at NYU, 32 Waverly Place, Silver Building, Room 401, Manhattan, New York. The Long Island Macintosh Users Group will meet on Friday, October the 13th, 7 p.m. at the New York Institute of Technology at Old Westbury Campus, Northern Boulevard and Valentine's Lane, meeting at the auditorium of the Harry J. Shore Hall. Princeton PC Users Group will be meeting on Tuesday, October the 24th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. Presentation is Passwords, Passwords, and More Passwords. They'll be meeting at the Mercer County Library in Lawrenceville, New Jersey. The Brookdale Computer Users Group will have a presentation on the Bundle Hyper Virtual Machine Program in Windows 8, 8.1, or 10. Meeting time is 6:45 p.m. on Thursday, October the 26th. They'll be meeting at the Middletown Library Lodge Meeting Room at 55 New Monmouth Road, Middletown, New Jersey. Westchester PC Users Group will have a presentation on cybersecurity Thursday, November the 2nd. Meeting time is 7 p.m. at Keller Williams Realty at 120 Bloomingdale Road on the first floor in White Plains, New York. The Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey will have its general meeting on Friday, November the 3rd, 8 p.m. in Scotch Plains Rescue Squad, 1916 Bartow Avenue in Scotch Plains, New Jersey. Danbury Area Computer Society will have a presentation on 3D design and printing, Tuesday, November the 7th, 7:30 p.m. at the Danbury Hospital Auditorium in Danbury, Connecticut. The Computer Learning Center at Ewing will have a presentation on new tech toys, Tuesday, December the 5th. Meeting time is 1:30 p.m. at the Community Room, 999 Lower Ferry Road in Ewing, New Jersey. All these meetings are open to the public and there is no charge for attendance. And we hope to see you there. If you have a computer club meeting that you want us to announce for you, just send it to me, hank@pcradioshow.org, and give me the name of the club, the location of the meeting, the date of the meeting, and the time, and include a URL, and we would like to know more about the subject matter itself. The website for the Personal Computer Show is pcradioshow.org, and we communicate via Twitter at pcradio212. We can be heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on prn.fm, on the Internet, and at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on WBAI FM 99.5 New York on the radio, or wbai.org streaming on the Internet. In the meantime, stay in touch and keep on computing, and remember, backup, backup, and backup. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of Joe King and Michael Horowitz, we thank you for listening. Stay safe and keep cool until we meet again. Same time, same station next week.